All right. Well, let's talk about gardening. And for the recording, everyone, this is Paul with Born to Grow. We have Rick on the phone here, and my dad, Edwin, is here with us as well. And so let's jump right in and talk about gardening. How's it been going in your garden, Rick?
Haven't done much of anything. We just moved this year, and we're going to start doing some gardening, but we're just finishing up, trying to work, get our house in a position to be livable.
Yeah.
And so we thought we were going to get gardening earlier this year than we ended up getting to. So we haven't started our official gardening yet.
Okay. All right.
Where are you located?
Cherry Valley, California.
Oh, okay. I grew up in Oak Glen.
Oh, that's just up the hill.
Yes, yeah. It's a very nice area there.
So, how involved have you been in gardening before? I mean, it sounds like you're just moving to a new place here. Have you guys been gardening for a while, though, before that? Or is this kind of just the start of the whole venture?
I'd have to say just start full venture because I used to live in a postage stamp lot. And the gardening I did was just around the house on that little bit. So just there wasn't much. And tried growing tomatoes and had – the only thing I could grow was cherry tomatoes, but the bee sticks couldn't get going. I don't know if it was issues of soil, issues of sun, or if it was too hot of weather for the bee sticks, but the only thing I could grow was the cherry tomatoes.
Hmm. Where were you growing the bee sticks?
Loma Linda.
Okay. Just outside, like in an outside garden, or were they in pots, or?
It was in the ground, in the backyard, kind of on a raised, wasn't officially a raised bed, but it would be kind of somewhat raised, just based on the rest of the garden, but it was just more of a retaining wall area.
Yeah.
And it was on the south side of the house, but there's a fence right behind it, so it would have been sometimes in the shade based on a citrus tree on the other side and stuff. So I didn't think it was getting intense sun all day long, but in the summer times it does get up to, at times, up to 108, 110 degrees.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I do know that tomatoes, when it gets really hot, they'll stop growing. Our tomatoes on the farm here seem to do best in the late spring and early fall.
Okay. But
in midsummer, the production goes down.
And that's perhaps based on heat?
I think it is, yes. We grow them inside hoop houses. We have the sides up so that there's good ventilation, but it is still warmer inside than out. But we do that because of the moisture here. You know, it's so humid and we get a lot of rain in the summer, and all that wet and humidity is very conducive to a number of diseases. And so if we keep them dry, it's better, even if they have a little extra heat.
Okay. Yeah, we we're on about 1.8 acres right now. We're playing with several different ideas, and I don't think I'll be able to do quite as much gardening as initially hoped for. It's something we'll have to grow in slowly, too. But trying to decide, being in California, in the summertime it gets so hot, not sure when a hoop house would be better than at other times or if I would need one. But in the wintertime, at times we do get below freezing. We haven't been here.
Are you at the top end of Cherry Valley or down lower?
Right next to Bogart Park. So we're about 30, about 3,000, 3,300 feet.
Okay.
Loma Linda is about 1,100, 1,200 feet.
Right.
So the temperature is usually about 5-8 degrees cooler than in the Loma Linda area.
Okay.
But in the wintertime, they can get snow on the ground here.
Right, right.
So we're trying to push our zone. I don't know how successful we'll be, but we've got a couple avocado trees and a mango tree.
Oh, really?
So I know it's pushing it for the zone because it's a it works better more for the cherries and peaches and stuff like that, the trees that lose their leaves, where the avocados don't. So I may have to build some kind of a hoop house at least for the wintertime.
Yeah. Now, have you do you have those in the ground already?
No, they're in pots.
Okay, so you don't have them outside yet.
They're outside. When we moved, I started them in Loma Linda a few years ago in the pots.
Uh-huh.
With the anticipation of moving.
Okay.
And now that we're here, we've just have them in pots, and need to make a decision soon what we're going to do.
Well, I'd be really interested to hear how they go.
Some people have had grown mangoes for several years, but then there is a winter, there ends up being a colder winter than other winters that they've ended up losing them, and I don't remember how big they were, about 4 or 5 inches in diameter.
Was that down in Loma Linda or up?
No, that's in Cherry Valley area.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. You know, I mostly grew up in Loma Linda, and then we moved up to Oak Glen when I was in high school. But hardly anyone tried to grow avocados because it was too cold. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But now I know a lot of people are growing avocados.
The place is not originally in a growing zone for.
Yeah, yeah. I know for us out here, they've moved us down a growing zone.
Oh.
I mean, we're a growing zone warmer than we used to be here in Tennessee.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So trying to remember if you said or not, what direction is your land facing?
It's kind of a square.
I'm assuming there's some slope to your property, and I guess what I'm asking is which direction is that slope facing?
That'd be a very gentle slope. The back area is a horse pasture. It's a divided horse pasture, which is relatively flat. It's just
okay.
A very, very mild slope towards the west. And then
okay.
It's kind of divided by trees between the horse pasture and then where the house and the front road is at.
Okay.
We have one area we have a small fruit orchard with a few trees that are doing pretty decent and some that are next to death if they haven't died already.
Hmm.
So just kind of inherited an orchard that we're not quite familiar with all the fruits just yet.
Okay.
But where we intend to is we have a smaller area where we can do a garden, and that's where we may start some of our gardening. And we may do raised bed because one of the big foes in the area is gophers.
Yes, yeah.
And so the other thing I've looked at, I've got like 100 pots for vertical gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to experiment with some vertical gardening, which you can somewhat control the soil. But I don't know, it's a relatively new thing compared to like raised bed gardening.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we had another call a little while back where the question came in about the gophers, and there was someone on the call who said that they had had experience with getting some, like a little device that puts out high-pitched sound. It's like the
gopher sticks.
Yeah.
Got it. And there's solar, and some are like a D battery operated.
Mm-hmm.
There's a person that I talked to, she's had both, and she prefers the D battery versions of it, but
okay.
They don't carry them. Like at the big box stores, you have to special order those, and they're a little bit more harder, perhaps a little bit more expensive to get, but we're... Like we said, we're learning everything. We have a bunch of ideas in our head, but nothing's hit the pavement just yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's good.
So we're trying to get started, and just want to make sure we start in the right direction. But some of it's going to be experiment and error.
Yeah. There's nothing better than just, you know, it's good to do your due diligence and you know, do your research and all, but nothing replaces just jumping in and trying it out too.
Right.
You'll never farming something that or gardening something that you'll never get right all the way.
But you know, that is kind of, you know, that's why we're here for you as well, because we want to be able to give you the opportunity to ask questions and find out, hopefully some of our mistakes and failures can be something that you can learn from and not have to push through yourself. So,
right.
Don't be afraid to shoot me an email or, you know, bring questions to these calls and stuff.
Okay. One thing that we're wanting to do is try to be as organic as possible.
Yeah.
But sometimes when we're fighting some things, I don't know if it can be challenging. But does worm farms, or is that a good source for fertilizer, better ideas than worm farms for fertilizers, taking the casting and stuff?
I think they're really excellent. We were really excited a couple of years ago to find through a customer referral, we found a very large worm farm about an hour and a half or so from us, where we can get all the worm castings we want for a very good price. We actually get them by the tractor trailer load, and
oh, wow.
And they cost about the same or maybe even a little less than the compost that we were getting previously. So we've just stopped using compost and we're using worm castings.
Have you found that to be maybe a better fertilizer?
Yeah. We try to, you know, we make our own potting soil mix and start our own transplants. And our potting soil mix is half peat moss and half worm castings. I mean, those are the two primary ingredients, and then we have a few other lesser, you know, nutrient ingredients, whatever. So we tried making up a mix. Before we bought a quantity of this, the guy who has the worm farm just sent us a sample. And so we made up a mix of our normal potting soil mix, and then we made up another one where we replaced the compost worm castings, and we seeded both mixes with cucumbers, and the worm casting mix, the cucumbers germinated a day earlier, and they were just ahead all the way. I mean, they were just larger and better looking.
Okay.
So we were convinced with that.
One kind of neat thing about the worm farm that we have close to us here is that the guy himself actually kind of a vertical business, in that he grows all his own organic corn that he feeds his worms off of, and then he feeds them the corn.
He makes corn silage, and then he feeds that to the worms.
And then, of course, he sells the worms off for the worms, and then the worm castings are kind of a byproduct. But, you know, if you are looking around you, you might check in to see what they're feeding the worms and or how they're growing the worms. And there's probably a decent chance that you could find one worm casting place that is doing it organically or that is using natural sources.
Okay. Yeah, the one I'm just trying to learn, I just learned that I could probably do it in a smaller version, just using these big plastic canisters and creating.
Oh, you're talking about raising your own worms.
Right, and then taking the castings and then even draining the bottom part of it and using some of the fluid at the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
Using, you know, having it there here on my own property, there's a guy over in Loma Linda that has one that he made his out of plywood. What I was looking at, which probably better, would be plastic because it wouldn't rot so easily.
Mm-hmm.
With taking both the fluid as well as the castings, and then you have to change it every so often, their environment. Well, one of the environments that they had mentioned was using old newspapers, and I don't know if that's considered not an organic source or what. It does have print on some of the, you know, in the newspapers if we use those.
They're talking about using that as part of the feedstock.
Well, that would be the environment from which the worms would be living in, and I understand
okay.
they chew on paper.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the environment of decomposing.
Right. Would you also be feeding them like your kitchen scraps?
Yes.
Yeah. For the newspaper, I think black and white newspaper is safer
better.
than the colored or glossy printed papers.
Okay. I think I have read that before.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as, and I think I had seen one of your links, and I have to go back and go through more of your previous releases on the gardening, kind of getting things started. What would you say would be your top 5 or 10 tools or items one would need to have a good, successful garden?
Well, that's a good question. Are you thinking of specifically like hand tools and tools along that wise that you'd be using out in the garden? Is that kind of what along the lines of what you're thinking, or are you thinking also of other resources and stuff?
Whatever would be. I've got a few things. I think I need to replace some old hand tools that have broken apart, the wooden handles and stuff. But, we've got a couple shovels. I think we've got a turning fork. And then we've just bought a greenhouse at Harbor Freight, a 10x12 greenhouse.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. I think there are a few tools that I would really want. One is a stirrupo. Are you familiar with those?
that exactly, but is it basically like a loop at the end of a pole?
Yeah, and it oscillates. I mean, it has some movement. It goes back and forth a little, you know, maybe an inch and a half or so.
Okay.
And so the way it works is you can, it'll take out weeds. You can push it forward through the ground and pull it back, and it takes out weeds going both ways. You just
okay.
run it so that the blade part, you know, it's a stirrup shaped thing, and so the blade mm-hmm. is on the bottom flat part, and that just slides beneath the surface of the ground, cutting off the plants from their roots.
Okay.
And it's really nice to use and a lot more efficient, you know, having that back and forth action than a hoe,
mm-hmm.
which only works, you know, with a chopping action one way.
Okay.
Another tool that I would like is a good garden fork.
Okay.
Now, Johnny Seed sells both of these. The kind of forks that you buy in a normal hardware store just aren't really well constructed, and they'll the tines will bend, and these ones that Johnny sells have a lifetime guarantee, and we've broken the handles on them and twice at least, and they've sent us a new fork each time.
Okay.
So they're really a solid piece of metal, and they have very sturdy tines. We've never had the tines bend or break on us.
Just the handle.
The handle has broken, but the tines have never bent or broken on us. Whereas the ones you buy in the you know, in most any hardware store here, the tines will bend before the handle breaks.
Okay.
So, anyways, it's very handy for a lot of things. I don't know. A lot of the tools we use are available at Johnny's. They have a very nice lightweight bed preparation rake. It's 30 inches wide. We tend to make most of our beds in the areas that we're working by hand, 30 inches wide. And
okay.
So that rake is very nice. You know, once you've used the fork to loosen up your soil, then we use that rake to smooth things out, and it picks.
Now, using the rake, we're using the fork and then the rake. Does that affect the soil differently than rototiller?
Yeah, a rototiller. I mean, I don't want to discourage you or give you the idea we don't ever use a tiller. We do use tillers, but we try to minimize our usage. And for a couple of reasons, but one is that the tines are quickly moving through the soil, and especially if the soil is very dry, they just tend to pulverize the soil,
mm-hmm.
and so the soil loses its structure. And then secondly, whenever you work the soil by turning it, you're usually giving air to it, and that it's kind of like adding more air to a fire. you know, mm-hmm. it helps with combustion, and so the organic matter that you have in your soil, every time you turn your soil like that, you're exposing that organic matter to more air, and it burns up faster. So for us, when it's hot especially, you know, the organic matter in our soil just really burns up fast, and it's always a battle to keep enough organic matter in our ground.
So the garden fork and then the preparation rake, how does that differ?
Well, what it does is we don't actually turn our soil. We loosen it up, but we don't turn it. And so that,
okay,
you know, we are letting some air in, but it's not the same as, you know, when you turn it all the way over.
Okay.
So essentially what you do is you push the garden fork down into the soil and then simply pull it back, kind of lifting the soil up and loosening it, but not actually
like stabbing a potato,
turning it over.
So it's like stabbing a potato with a fork and then pulling it straight out?
Yeah, although you actually pull it like you're going to be, so you push the fork down in, and then you pull the handle back, so you're using it kind of like a lever to lift the soil up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like you're stabbing a potato, yeah.
Okay.
And there's actually a visual demonstration of it under the first module, planning and preparation. Under bed preparation, there's a little visual demonstration of how we prepare our beds.
Okay.
And in the demonstration there, they're using what's called a broad fork, which is kind of it's like a large garden fork that will do your whole bed, you know, whole bed width at once, at least on a 30-inch wide bed, which, you know, if you had the budget to get one, it could be very useful. Could cut down on your workload as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we work full time, so this is our sometimes in the evening and sometimes on Sunday.
Yeah,
right. No, I think a garden fork would do. I mean, that's what I would recommend for somebody who's doing it on the side.
Mm-hmm.
The broad fork is a nice tool, but it's a little pricier, and you know it's not necessary, and it has a more limited function. The garden fork you can use for lots of things besides bed preparation too. I really like to use it for weeding. You know, there are a number of weeds that are deeply rooted, you know, that have a tap root. And using the garden fork is the only way I can really get those roots out easily.
Okay.
So I use it a lot for those kinds of things, as well as the bed preparation.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that little video on bed preparation that Paul has shows you several of those tools. And that.
Okay. I think I saw part of it, but I didn't get to see. Might have been even the intro video to that one, and I don't think I actually have gotten a chance to go back to do it. Like I said, we thought we were going to be gardening a lot earlier than we are turning out to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think you guys were talking about you have a 30-inch wide bed. Now, is that just mounded up dirt, or is that – that's not like a what we'd call a raised bed where you get 2x4s or 2x12s or whatever, where you lift it up 16 inches off the ground?
No, we don't do that, because we found that that wood gets in our way.
Okay.
You know, it gets in the way of the tools, like if we're using that broad fork, or or if you're bringing a wheelbarrow in, you know, it just gets in the way.
Okay.
So we, you know, we have our beds marked. We have a rebar with a piece of PVC over it to add some people can see it and not, you know, get stabbed by it, whatever. But so we have those on each corner of our beds, and then we'll also run a line. You know, if we're working up the bed, we can run a line from one rebar to on one end of the bed to it on the other end, and then we can use that line to help us keep straight on the bed. But we just loosen the ground up in the bed, so we have a permanent bed and a permanent walkway next to it. And the beds are usually, because we loosen the ground up in them and we're adding compost to them, they are usually raised up a little higher than the walkways. The walkways are packed down and the beds are loose and raised up a little bit, but it's not because we're trying to make a raised bed. It just works
okay
that way because we're keeping that ground worked and loose.
So we didn't know if because of the tremendous amount of gophers that we have out here, if the raised bed would be better for that, to try to keep some of the gophers out. Because, I mean, like one of the things we're thinking of with raised bed is maybe laying down some kind of a chicken wire or something like that underneath it so that they can't come up underneath it.
Right.
Versus those gopher stakes, trying to keep the gophers out mechanically through that high pulse sound.
Yeah.
Because we're also looking at economically, which is most viable. And when you do raise bed, that was my one concern. It can be a large amount of money spent on bringing those beds up.
Yeah, I mean, I can just tell you that if I was in your position, I would go for the gopher stakes.
Yeah.
I would try that first, and if it did not work for me, then I would start to think about the beds. But I would much prefer not to have to deal with those beds, with the raised beds.
Okay. All righty. Well, that helps out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, with the vertical gardening, which we're going to try some of that stuff as well. I'm presuming that will keep the gophers out, but then we'll probably run into other issues of how to keep the soil fertile because they'll be in individual boxes and stack one on top of the other. So
right,
that was something we're going to experiment with.
Yeah.
It's, you know, water is expensive for us out here, and we don't have a well on the property. We don't know if we did put a well, they may end up putting a meter on top of it and charging us for the water we take out, which would make it kind of cost prohibitive for us.
Wow.
Some form of a drip system of some type beneficial to help get water to the plants, but yet not spending $600 every 2 months on water?
Yes. We have plenty of water, but we still use drip lines a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, just because they're probably one of the easiest ways to, you know, inside our hoop houses, for example, you know, we're not going to get rain, obviously, inside the hoop house, so we use the drip lines there. But we also do some field work where we make raised beds that we cover with plastic mulch, And so then we have to obviously use drip lines underneath that to get those things watered. But we use quite a bit of drip, and I don't know if you can. I'm not sure what kinds of irrigation and drip lines you have available out there. The kinds we use are they're flat black plastic lines that have a little slit every 6 to 12 inches. You can buy it with different slit spacings, but they'll just water a bed evenly.
Okay.
You know, for that emitter, we found the 6-inch one works really good at watering evenly. And they operate on very low pressure, so you don't have to have a lot of pressure in your line. For example, you can gravity irrigate out of a tank.
There's another little plus for using drip lines as well, which happens to be a plus on the side. Not only does it conserve water, but also it's kind of neat because you're much more directional, and so it can help a lot with weed problems, keeping the water away from where weeds would otherwise be growing in your pathways and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I would really encourage you, and you might have already done this, check in with other local gardeners around your area and see what kinds of drip systems they are using. 'Cause there's all different types of drip systems that are available in different areas, and that might be a really good way to find out what kind of drip system is working it with that are gardeners that are around your area and that might be available locally and easy, because you want to be able to easily get parts for it. And, you know, with online businesses and stuff, it can be easier as well to get parts, but if you can get them locally, that might be nice.
Okay.
Do you happen to know Jim and Kathy McMillan?
I think there's a Mike McMillan that I know of, but Jim and Kathy offhand, I don't know if I do know them. I've heard the McMillan name, but I think I've heard of him in the Loma Linda area, and I think he's a pastor.
Okay, yeah, that's Jim's brother.
Okay.
He's
Jim and who, McMillan?
Kathy.
Kathy, is that with a C or a K?
A K.
Okay.
Anyways, they live just up the road from you. They're in the kind of at the bottom of Oak Glen, right before Cherry Valley starts. And they are really avid and expert gardeners. Jim he grew up gardening. His folks were gardeners too, and they put in a fairly large garden and do a lot of canning, and they have a nice orchard, and they're a really good local resource for you.
Okay. McMillan. McMillan.
Yes. Jim is a urologist at the VA hospital.
Okay, I'll have to ask Dr. Patel if he knows it. All righty. Well, that will be helpful. Was there any particular subject that you were having on today's call-in that you're going to present today on that offhand?
Yeah, you know, we hadn't really decided to do a full-blown presentation. Wanted to really get in and get into people's questions and find out. We thought about talking a little bit about winter gardening, and that's kind of neat because where you're at there, because it'll be fairly easy for you to even extend your season right through the winter. It actually wouldn't be a lot harder for people up in like Washington to drop their season all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't need a lot. Are you thinking of growing year round?
Eventually, yes. We would, you know, probably like your cabbages and broccolis and asparagus or whatever in the winter time, and
right.
And I don't know, zucchinis or whatever in the summertime. But we eventually would like to grow varieties of fruits and vegetables, you know, raspberries and blueberries. I don't know if they can grow well here, but we have one cherry tree on the prop. I think there's only about 4 cherries I got off of the tree this year. I think the birds took about 90% of the cherries.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, we're dealing with different kinds of predators when you deal with birds, but then the true organic farmers, they don't like to get rid of too much of anything because you throw off the ecosystem, you get rid of birds, then you get bugs.
That's right.
So that's where we're trying to know how to have a healthy balance of everything, but we would like to be able to grow fruits and vegetables of a variety of sorts, so our going to the grocery store is a rarity, is our goal.
Yeah. Well, you could really do that. I mean, it would take work, but it would not be too hard to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Where you are and with the amount of land that you have there.
Yeah, we got sufficient land as far as growing our own stuff.
Yeah.
It's just making the property set up in that direction that we can do those things in. Because right now it was set up for horses. So one pasture has no water in it. The other one just has one spout in the middle of it. And I think the automatic sprinkler system, at least one of the 12 stations doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I think it needs a lot of maintenance on it.
Uh-huh.
I think there's some leaks I think that we're dealing with that we have to find to remedy all that stuff.
Yeah.
Once we can get the water issue resolved and in getting a efficient use of water on what we're growing but not watering the weeds, I think we'll be doing good then.
Yes.
Well, that's really neat. That's exciting. I'll look forward. Keep us posted on how things come along. I'd love to hear how it goes.
Yeah, well, we'll be excited too when it happens.
Yeah.
Didn't realize that moving would be as stressful as it would be. We thought it would be, like I said, we thought we were going to have at least a small garden started this year, and we didn't, with unplanned other issues that we were not expecting, it delayed our gardening plans. So, but we're going to attempt to try to get things rolling here during the winter months so that by next spring, summer, we'll be having at least a small garden started. So, and then from that, we'll build out from there.
Yeah. One thing that's just been coming into my mind that you might be interested. Have you heard of the idea of lasagna gardening?
I may have heard the term, but I do not know what it is.
The fundamental idea is that, you know, if you have time and would like to get the worm to till your ground for you, you can
oh.
use this method. If you don't have time, then you'll have to do your own, you know, groundbreaking yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like a time. So the basic idea is to cover the area that you want to establish garden beds in, to cover it with old cardboard and or newspapers. And the main idea is that these will prevent the weeds from coming up. They'll block the weeds that are in your soil there and keep them from coming up. And then
okay.
you'll on top of that you put a layer of compost, you know, maybe an
okay.
inch and a half of compost on top of that. And then a layer of straw, like maybe 4 inches of straw.
Quite a bit, huh?
Yeah, quite a bit. And if you want, you could do that again. Put another layer of compost and then more straw on top of that. But I think just that would be enough. Maybe, you know, instead of if you're not going to put a second layer, maybe you want to even put 6 inches of straw, because it'll settle as it decomposes. Anyways, you just let that sit through the winter, and in the spring, you know, in late March, early April, you could start planting into it. I would pull the, you know, the straw aside that's on top, and you could put transplants down into it, and you won't have to do any soil preparation at all.
Wow.
You'll be set to go.
Okay. That sounds less labor intensive.
You just got the initial of getting
it down
with the straw and the compost. And
but
yeah.
You know, those are things you're probably going to want to put on your garden anyways. So
okay, that sounds good. Then we'll look into that and get that part started here by beginning of January, and get planting hopefully by early April. That'll help. We'll try the lasagna gardening then. Okay.
Sounds great.
That's good.
Yeah, and like I said, definitely keep us posted. Let us know how things go, and if you run into any questions along the way, don't be afraid to shoot me over an email, and I can do my best to try and get you an answer.
Okay. Appreciate your help. Next time we're in Tennessee, maybe we'll stop by.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah,
we would love it.
Do you ever come out this way?
Haven't. Actually, I think I've been in Tennessee, but it was in the 80s, I think, the last time I was out in Tennessee.
Okay.
But someday we might.
Yeah, definitely. If you make it out, give us a call and stop by. We'd love to see you.
Okay.
And thanks so much for getting on the call.
All right. Well, thank you for the response. And since I was the only one, we got a lot of, was able to ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. That
yeah, loved it. Well, I don't want to close it off unless you have anything else that you want to say.
Well, those are the big parts, I think, or the issues were the gophers and, you know, the different kinds of pests. And that's something maybe, you know, look, see if you have any information on that stuff down the road of how to create a balance with the organic farming without using chemicals and other stuff to kill pests, of how to control pests in a way that you can use the one pest to offset the other one so it doesn't destroy the crop and without doing too much harm to the environment. And so that will be helpful.
You know, just a quick idea on that. One of the kind of a fundamental germ idea on dealing with pests like that is to try to encourage as much biodiversity on your land as possible. And for beneficial insects, it seems that flowering shrubs and annuals and perennials, anything that flowers seems to encourage beneficials quite a bit. Another thing you can look for is there are actual beneficial seed mixes that you can buy on the market that have a mix of 10 or 12 or more different kinds of seeds of grasses and flowers and all different kinds of things that are known to encourage different beneficial insects. And so, you know, you could think about, you know, having some beds with something like that planted near your garden. And anyways, the basic idea is that, you know, the more biodiversity, the more balanced you're going to be and less likely to have a huge insect problem on a particular crop.
Okay.
And when I say biodiversity, that includes the birds and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and there's definitely more that could go into with pest management and organics. Definitely check out the module on pests. There's some good tips and information in there on dealing with pests, and even setting it up to. We really believe in prevention, if possible, preventing them in the first place. So,
right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Rick. Appreciate your
Thank
questions.
You, Paul.
Nice talking with you.
Yes, appreciate you taking the call.
Absolutely. You have a wonderful evening, and keep us posted.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right.
God bless.
All right. Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.